Good evening and welcome, or welcome back, as I begin my third hour broadcast tonight. Jeff Bennett here for the next hour on life, liberty, and all that jazz. And tonight we're going to be returning to the all that jazz, because that's what we've been doing. We've been getting jazzed for years, and I don't necessarily mean in a positive light. Ladies and gentlemen, if you go back to the early days of that form of music and you understand what the darker community in this nation meant when they talked about jazz, well, that's what the government and the economists have been doing to each and every one of us for many, many, many years. So welcome to tonight's very special installment. Before I bring our guest on, I want to share a brief paragraph that came to me last night by our guest. And he states that for almost a third of his entire life, he's been trying to get people to listen to the message that he's trying to share with you right now and to get you to understand it. He says, at this point, I think I've been shown a relatively easy-to-understand way of presenting it from the top down as opposed to the bottom-up approach that we had tried to utilize for so many years. He says, my hope and prayer is that I can position a silver spike above the demon's heart and help to educate and anger tens of thousands of people with mallets to drive it in. And that is the basis of what we initially intended on getting out over a two-night time period. But I think I know our guest well enough to say that this is going to go on for quite a while. Obviously not consecutively, because that we can't do. But we'll get all those details worked out. Welcome once again to the program. Roger Sales, the town crier, and I'm turning the mic over to you because I'm going down the hall to the library.
Man, thanks for the introduction, man. You almost get me teared up here starting.
Don't do that, because I know how you sound when you get teared up, brother.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, man. Thanks a lot. And it is. It's accumulation of an 18-year goal. And for me, it's probably the major goal of my life. And I think if we can get what I'd like to see happen and the ripple effect happening here, it'll be my major life's accomplishment, enough for me. What I intend to do, or at least I'd like to do, if any of you remember the Alfred Hitchcock movie, The Birds, Bodega Bay up there above San Francisco, is I would like to help create this is Zero Hedge's word, a cluster flock of black swans. And I'd like to have you people get black swanned up and start attacking these people like those seagulls did in Bodega Bay. So that's my purpose. Once again tonight, I want to start with a prayer, though, and I want to thank God for giving me the knowledge and the understanding and the ability to communicate this information. And my prayer is that I'll get the right words from the right thoughts, and that those words will land on the right hearts of those who that burning fire of freedom burns in your chest. Because this is the way you can achieve it. And Jesus told us he's the truth, the way, and the light. And this is the truth, and it's the way to find the light, and it's the light of freedom. So with that, I say amen. And we're going to get started. And I'm going to come back and address this top-down thing because I neglected a little bit last night, assuming that everyone was listening last night that had listened to our original program about 10 days ago when we talked mainly about Argentina. But I touched on some of this that night. And one of the great revelations to me, and actually to my mentors also, came as my decision to leave the country because I'd never had a passport before. And quite frankly, I was kind of scared to get one and to apply for one because, you know, one of the ways the federal government controls you is through intimidation. That's why they wear black. And so back when in MLM days, one of my trainers said fear is an acronym for fantasized experiences appearing real. And those are those things that stop you in your tracks from moving forward because you literally have fear of what might be on the other side. And I know everybody listening can relate to this because I swear it's happened to everybody. And all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you have to address that fear and you address it. And it's easy, and you look back and go, why was I so terrified of that? Why was I so scared of it? There's nothing to it. It was easy. And that's what happened to me in this decision, because I had to get a passport because I made the decision to leave the country, okay? So I knew that I had to go get a passport application. And if you'll think about it, the passport application is probably the single most important document in a federal government that has millions of documents when it applies to your status, which is your status in the political community and in the society. So I went and got this orange one, the first time application, and I read this the other night, but let's go over it again because some of you might have missed it, and it's dreadfully important. And I read the first paragraph. It says application for a U.S. passport on the top. By the way, there's a link on Jeff's site to a reapplication for passport. You can see this same verbiage. They hide it a little bit better in there. And the first sentence in capital letters, it says, warning. False statements made knowingly or willfully in passport applications, comma, including affidavits or other supporting documents submitted therewith, are punishable by gelding and, you know, possession of your firstborn male child. So what they're telling you there, you can make a declaration earlier in the documents, U.S. passports are issued only to U.S. citizens or non-citizen nationals. Each person must obtain his or her own passport. All through this thing, it talks about in the instructions several times, two different types of citizenships. What did we cover last night that it says under the Paperwork Reduction Act? Often, this is difficult to do because our citizenship laws are very complex. We covered a lot of definitions last night, and we didn't really cover all of them, and we didn't go into great depth because I'm trying to keep this streamlined and simple. You think the citizenship laws are a little complex? What does it say in the oath on the passport that you sign? In big letters above it, stop, capital letters, with a box around it. Capital letters. Do not bold capital letters. Do not sign this application until requested to do so by the person administering oath. What does the oath say? I declare, under penalty of perjury, that I am a citizen of the United States, parentheses, or a non-citizen national, close parentheses, and have not, since acquiring United States citizenship, parentheses, or U.S. nationality, parentheses, performed any of the acts or conditions listed under acts or conditions on the reverse side of the application form, parentheses, unless explanatory statement is attached, parentheses closed. Now, in the second part of that sentence, they tell you that you're going to have to include some sort of documentation if you've done and violated any of these acts or conditions. Yet in the preceding part of the sentence, it gives you two different, and they're totally mutually exclusive because one of them is a citizen and the other is a non-citizen national. But they don't tell you there to attach any documentation, do they? No. Where do they tell you? Way up at the top of the form. How do they tell you? Warning. If you do this or do that, you're going to jail or get fined or whatever else we can do to you. So I think you can see the point I'm getting to is these things are separated. Well, when I saw that, I knew exactly. When I saw the word affidavit, I knew I was home free. Okay? I didn't even read the rest of the form. I did eventually, but I knew at that point that I had them. Okay? Because I understood all this information we're going to talk about. And we're going to get into the meat of this stuff tonight. But let me, since we're on this, let me go into a little more of an explanation. This was a top-down approach that really opened my eyes. Because before, it would take 3 or 4 hours to go over this complicated information and these technical legal things that most people have no idea of. I didn't have any idea of it when I sat down and saw this information for the first time, and it took me a while for it to clear up because, like I told you last night, you're untying these knots in your mind that they've done like Pavlov's dogs with you and everybody else. They've taken a word with a definition that you identify with a colloquial definition in one hand on your right. Point your right arm out with your finger pointing out. And they've taken that definition and they've put it way over there, and you relate to it because that's the one they hammer home to you all the time and condition you with. Then they've taken an opposite, totally, highly technical legal definition, put your left arm out and stretch it out, that's exactly that direction. Okay, and they've got your knot tied in, your mind tied in the knot. Now, I've had an idea for years, and I tell people this, and I don't think it's ever failed me. If you want to listen to something these creeps tell you, and you want to find out what the truth is, look 180 degrees in the opposite direction, because that's where you're going to find the truth, and it's virtually never been wrong. And that's this tying your mind in knots and throwing you down another direction totally opposite. It's just like Baal said, trick them and defeat them with words. Okay? So that's what we're dealing with. Now, since we had a basketball game last night, transition into sports, I'm going to use a sports analogy here. Let's say we got the team of citizens that are playing in the championship game, and it's basketball. And you're real good, you got a great team assembled, and you want to go out, it's right before the game, and you go out to do your warm-ups and stuff. But when you go out on the court, the court's like no court you've ever been on before. And your tennis shoes aren't real sturdy on that surface. And you're trying to dribble your balls, and it doesn't really react the same way. And you're trying to warm up and get practice for the big game, because it's the title game, okay? It's the title game of freedom, all right? And all of a sudden, the Federale team comes out of their locker room. They're dressed in black, by the way, except their uniforms have all kind of pads on them. And they come out, and they don't have Nike tennis shoes on. They got these black shoes on, and they got a real long, skinny metal spike on the bottom of it. And they don't have a ball. They got these sticks with a curve, and they aren't dribbling. They got this little bitty, hard, black thing that they're shooting around at about 100 more. It's happening. Playing hockey, and you're playing basketball on ice. Now, I ask you, who the hell do you think is going to win that game? And that's exactly what we've been doing. We've been playing all this constitutional law, thinking you've got access to the Constitution, and they've made you all slaves. And you don't have access to the Constitution because you don't get your rights from God. You get your privileges from government. They call them civil rights. Okay, so we're going to cover a lot of this tonight, and hopefully I'll be able to explain it. I've tried to cut it down and not make it complicated, but yet, like the analogy last night, make it long enough to cover the subject matter. So what I'd like to pick up is where we transitioned off last night when the bell went off, with John finding, knocking the book off of the shelf. The book falls open on the floor. He looks down at the book, and it's the old English tax system, and there's a list of the things that the king couldn't take from you when he came and took everything else. And John had been studying enough to know that those were the exact things that the IRS can't take from you. Work product, etc., etc. And that's what started a lot of this. And that's why I'm here tonight, is because of this great man's dedication and sacrifice. And I won't get into that, or I will get misty. So we're going to transition into a little bit to the feudal era. When you had a feudal zone over there in Europe and in England, it was called a manor, and the boss was called the lord of the manor. Now, the king had his own court. There was a bunch of courts back in England in those days. Had a court for each jurisdiction. You had a court for admiralty, you had a court for equity, you had the king's bench, you had a court for ecclesiastical, etc., etc. But the king's court, the highest court in the land of common law, was called the king's bench. However, serfs didn't have access to the king's bench because they were on the manor and they were property, like we discussed last night. The lord of the manor owned a property right in them. They're legally a thing. So the serfs had their own courts on the manor that they had to go through. You know, kind of like Article 3 courts called this. Because that's what you got up there in the States right now, is you got a manorial court system. And if you'll look at any case that's brought in any of those courts, in the very first paragraph, it says, so-and-so, a resident of, boom. And there's their jurisdiction in the first paragraph. It's in every one of them, okay? We're going to cover that more in depth, too. So, and they only deal with residents. So, are you a resident? Sure, I'm a resident. 180 degrees, boom. Legal definition imputed. So I'm going to read a little bit tonight. I don't really like to do that, but I feel like it's so important to cover this. This is the meat of the subject, and we're going to read from that affidavit online, too, a little bit. So some of you might bring that up if you want to read along with me on that. Don't all of you go at once or you might crash Jeff's site, I hope.
No, let me say this because it has been interesting. I've had a lot of people that have come in and said, well, gee, I couldn't open that or whatever. It is in a PDF file format. So if you don't have Adobe on your system, you're going to have a little bit of a problem with it. But if you go to the Republic Trading Group International.com website. Right at the top, it says returning April 5th, 2011. Gives you about a paragraph of the basics of what this program is about. Click on where it says continued reading. And I believe the affidavit you're talking about is the one that you comically referred to as the get out of slavery card. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I guess one of us comically referred to it as that.
That opens up your affidavit, which was filed in Bay County, Florida.
Yes.
And just click on and it'll open up. So that's what they
want. And while we're talking about that, and we're going to get into that in a few minutes, but I wish if you're looking at that, that you notice the date that that was filed. All the stamps are on there. It's certified. It's notarized. All the legal stuff, all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. And the date that was filed was December 31st of 1992. That affidavit has been presented to the IRS. No objections, no rebuttal affidavit. I've gotten two passports with it at this point, an original one and a replacement one, because my other one was stolen. We're going to talk about that later on, too. Not to run. I've gotten my Social Security with it. I insisted through the embassy in Buenos Aires with the gal that I worked with, sweet gal down there, that affidavit be attached to my application and made incorporated by reference. No problems. I'm getting my Social Security checks. Thank you. It's money they took from me a long time ago. It comes at a very convenient time for me. And I got a Florida State picture ID as a non-resident non-citizen of the United States, and it's hologrammed, and it's suitable for any Patriot Act requirement. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, too. So anyway, let's get into the meat of what we're going to talk about. We're going to case that we mentioned last night, the U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark. Wong Kim Ark obviously was Chinese. And this statement that I'm going to read right here is from a guy named Justice Fuller. Now, he was not just Justice Fuller. He was Chief Justice Fuller. So this statement is written by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court on the dissenting side of the opinion. So if anybody disagrees with me or you want to be argumentative, go find where Chief Justice Fuller is buried and go get argumentative with him. Because I'm citing you language out of a standing Supreme Court case. It's never been overruled, and it was used extensively recently within the last few years by almost all the legal country that went after him on this birthing, because it's even case in this personal that deals with citizenship, denizenship, how citizenship is transferred, what the laws of England was, what your rights are. And if any of you are really interested in that, I really suggest you go back and read that case, okay? But I'm just going to read you a little part here, because this proves my point absolutely and unequivocally. The rule was the outcome of the connection in feudalism between the individual and the soil on which he lived. And the allegiance due was that of a liege man to a liege lord. That the 14th Amendment prescribed the same rule as the Act, and that, if the amendment bears the construction now put upon it, it imposed the English common law rule on this country for the first time, and it made it absolute and unbending, just as Great Britain was being relieved of its inconvenience. What's he telling you there? He's telling you the 14th Amendment brought the English slavery, the feudal system, into America for the first time. And it was what? Made it absolute and unbending. So if any of you want to argue with the system that we're dealing with or how I've come to these conclusions, go read the case. It's all right there. It amazes me that the people that have used the case so much never pick some of this stuff out and put it together, but I understand it's a difficult puzzle. It's easier when it's explained to you to see it from the back end. It's a simple concept. They've just muddied the water at so many levels that even the finest legal country have not been able to figure it out. Okay? So what I'd like to do now is read a little bit more out of the Constitution this time. But we're not going to read the 14th Amendment first. We're going to read the 13th Amendment first. The 13th Amendment was passed before the Civil War. Many of you know that the amendment we're going to read was a replacement for another amendment, which was the original 13th Amendment. They somehow got that out of the Constitution, and they put this new one in. And I'll tell you, one of the guys in Atlanta, Joe, that found this. His family was in Connecticut, and he went up to visit, went into one of the libraries down there, and he found an old Connecticut law book. And he opened it up, and there was an original Constitution in there, and there was the original 13th Amendment printed in the law book. Okay, so don't say it didn't happen. It happened, and they didn't want people with titles of nobility, such as Esquire, like lawyers, being in Congress. And they had to get rid of that. And they got rid of it, and they replaced it with this one. And it says, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for a crime wherein the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place to their jurisdiction. All right? So let's talk about that. Did that outlaw slavery, Jeff? Jeff's not there. Okay.
Well, I'm here. I was okay. Muted. No, it did not outlaw slavery.
No, it didn't, did it? It outlawed involuntary slavery, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't say one thing about voluntary slavery, did it? Because the Constitution has a clause that you can't impair the right to contract. And there are certain peoples that go into a bonded type of slavery, a bond servant, where they literally give their body for whatever money, and they work out their time, and they're gone. So they use this loophole right here to drive the entire agenda of slavery through. That's why I think they had to get this thing in there. They had to get the other one out. And the other thing I wanted to point out here is the last clause, or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Collective, right?
Mm-hmm.
States, huh? Okay, so let's go to the 14th Amendment. And it reads, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they hide. Did you see any plural language there?
Let me break in for just a second and clarify. The final word in that statement was reside. What you may not be aware of is we're getting a little bit of clipping. We are going to go to a break at the bottom of the hour, and we are going to attempt a reconnect of this call. We're getting a lot of clipping on this, so we just may have a bad connection.
Okay, could be.
Proceed.
I wish I had time to reboot my computer.
I know.
So we'll come back and read that again, and we'll cover what we're going to talk about, okay? And sorry for the clipping.
No, we still got 6 minutes or so. Keep going.
All right. Well, let's go ahead. And all persons, read it again, born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. That's singular. That ain't plural. So between the 13th and 14th Amendment, you went from a there to a it's. Are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. Now, from the definitions we covered last night a little bit, let's analyze this. What did we say about persons? Persons isn't just you. You're a human. You're a person. It can be a corporation or whatever. And it's a legal definition is what? An entity to whom the law ascribes rights and duties. Rights and duties, remember, are correlative. Okay? So there's one landmine. In other words, hey, I may not be that person. I don't receive any rights. If I don't owe any duties, that ain't my personage. Okay? Naturalized in the United States. Well, which United States? If you go to Black's Law Dictionary and look up United States, it says this term has several meanings. There's about three of them or four of them listed there. They're from another Supreme Court case. So if it says the United States, which United States? And subject. What are subjects? England has subjects to the jurisdiction. What is jurisdiction? Protection for allegiance. Allegiance for protection thereof. And what did it say? We'll cover the jurisdictional thing here in a little bit. I think I read it last night, and it said that clause made that it was absolute and unbending, didn't it? To the jurisdiction of the United States, but completely subject to their political jurisdiction and owing them direct and immediate allegiance is what that clause means. Are citizens of the United States. Which kind of citizens? The new citizens under the 14th Amendment. And of the state wherein they reside. The most dangerous word in the English language in our society up there is reside. So there's about six or seven landmines in that first clause right there. And it's important to understand all those legal definitions we went under last night, because If you understand those, you don't understand what they're saying here. Okay? Now, let me ask you a question, Jeff. You know what the 14th, you know, every time they pass a law up there, they give it a legislative title while they're working on it. And with this particular one later on, it was termed the 14th Amendment when it was falsely ratified by force and intimidation and added to the Constitution because they had to get it in there. You know what the working title of the 14th Amendment was, Jeff? You got muted again.
I'm with you. Go ahead.
The working title of the 14th Amendment was the Civil Rights Act. Okay. Ding, ding, ding.
So we all jump up to the 1960s. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you sure did. We're going to cover that in more detail, but I think people are starting to see the light here. You know what I think Truman said, when I feel the heat, I see the light. if you want to confirm this, you can go to Title 42, the United States Code. It's one of those volumes, Title 2. And what title? Title 42? It's the Civil Rights title, all right? And you can go to Sections 1960 and 1961. If they hadn't changed them, I hadn't looked recently, but I don't think they have. This is Congress. This isn't Roger, all right? And what does it say in there? A citizen of the United States is equal to all the privileges and immunities of the white citizens. That's in the United States Code today, sports fans. That's Congress talking. So, about that. We'll go over, and or how close we are, are we to the break, Jeffrey?
We're getting pretty close. We've got maybe 30, 45 seconds, about it.
All right. Well, let me go back then and touch on something that I read the first night. The people here may not have heard that. And excuse me. And this is a quote from Lewis T. McFadden, the great Lewis T. McFadden, in one of his speeches. And he says, "The New Deal lawyers now have no hesitancy in appearing in court and asserting that private citizens can contract away their constitutional rights." That's Lewis T. McFadden speaking from the grave to you, folks. He knew what was happening. He may not have known as explicitly as you're going to by the time we're finished, but he knew that there was a skunk in the woodpile somewhere, and that's why they killed him, all right? And that and many other reasons, and it took him 3 attempts. He was a heck of a guy. And I'll repeat what I said the other night. The last time he ran for Congress in his district in Pennsylvania, he was nominated by the Democrats, he was nominated by the Republicans, and he was nominated by the Populist Party, which was popular. Back. I don't believe you're ever going to find another congressman that was
okay,
nominated.
Okay, we got to run to a break, Raj. Sit tight. We may do a reconnect, but we'll be right back with you, folks. Enjoy. I hope you're learning something.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
This is an important message from HempUSA.org. For our listeners who are advancing in age, baby boomers, and to all who want to be healthy, we urge you to try our microplant powder and see the difference it makes in your life. Please visit HempUSA.org and read about microplant powder. It's easy to take, one heaping tablespoon in any liquid 3 times a day. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org. Please inform your family, friends, and relatives about this incredible product. It can change your life if you give it a chance. So try microplant powder today. Call 908-691-2608. In this toxic world, microplant powder can help now in cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, viruses, fungus, and bacteria. Please download our catalog at hempusa.org today.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendivite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and 4 other herbs, Extendivite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Coming back out of the break for the second half of tonight's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. Glad to have you here, our special guests and good friend Roger Sales. And I know that Roger is looking forward to many more return visits. And I think that, Roger, I kind of have to leave this up to you and your comfort level when you reach that point. But when you feel we've pretty much got it laid out, at some point I'd like to, not tonight, of course, but kind of open up some phones one night and start fielding some questions if you're up to that.
I'd love to do that because the only dumb question is the one that isn't asked, you know.
Excellent.
Okay, we're going to get back into this. Hopefully our connection's a little bit better. We've readjusted and reconnected. I'm going to read from this affidavit, and like I said, I kind of hate to do that, but anybody wants to open it up that you can, and you want to read along and follow the bouncing ball, this is important stuff, all right? This is from a case called the Slaughterhouse Cases. This was the very first case that adjudicated the 14th Amendment. It was out of Louisiana. And so it's called a landmark or a benchmark case, and they can't go back and overturn this because this is the key to their slavery system, all right? So let's read what they have to say here. It had been said by eminent judges that no man was a citizen of the United States except as he was a citizen of one of the states composing the Union. Those, therefore, who had been born and always resided in the District of Columbia or in the territories, though within the United States, were not citizens. Whether this proposal was sound or not had never been judicially decided. So it says that there were these people in this federal zone that were in limbo, and there was like a lot of discussion in the public journals and newspapers, it says in another place, and it had never been judicially decided. But it had been held by this court, the Supreme Court, in the celebrated Dred Scott case, many of you have learned about that, only a few years before the outbreak of the Civil War, that a man of African descent, whether a slave or not, was not and could not be a citizen of a state or of the United States. This decision had never been overruled, and if it was to be accepted as a constitutional limitation on the right of citizenship, then all of the Negro race who had recently been made freemen were still not only not citizens, but were incapable of becoming so by anything short of an amendment to the Constitution. To remove this difficulty primarily, the first clause of the first section was framed. I'm going to repeat this, that the main purpose was to establish the citizenship of the Negro. Negro can admit of no doubt. That the main purpose was to establish the citizenship of the Negro can admit of no doubt. Okay, now this isn't racist. This is the way things were, all right? The next observation is that the distinction between a citizenship of the United States and a citizenship of a state is clearly recognized and established. It's quite clear, then, there's a citizenship of the United States and a citizenship of a state, which are distinct from each other and which depend upon characteristics or circumstances in the individual. What does that mean? Circumstances and characteristics, that's your legal personality, okay? These rights and duties and things. We think this distinction and its explicit recognition in the amendment of great weight in this argument, because the next paragraph in the same section speaks only of privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States and does not speak of those of the several states. The language is, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges and immunities of the citizens of the United States. It is a little more. If this clause was intended as a protection of the citizens of a state, the original citizens, against the legislative power of its own state, that the word citizen of the state should be left out when it was so carefully used and used in contradistinction of citizens of the United States in the very sentence which preceded it. It is too clear for argument that the change in phraseology was adopted understandingly and with a purpose. Of the privileges and immunities of the citizen of the United States and privileges and immunities of the citizen of the state, it is only the former, the citizens of the United States, which are placed under this clause, the privileges and immunities clause, under the protection of the federal Constitution, and that the latter, the citizens of the state, wherever they may be, are not intended to have any additional protection by this paragraph of the amendment. The latter must rest on their security and protection where they have heretofore rested, for they are not embraced by this paragraph. It's telling you, clear as day, we got no effect on these people. This is for this whole new class of citizens, which this first clause has empowered with rights and duties. The only thing they call them civil rights, the Civil Rights Act, and they have correlative duties. But with few exceptions, few, the entire domain of the privileges and immunities of citizens of the state, as above defined, lay within the constitutional and legislative power of the state and without that of the federal government. They had no jurisdiction over them. Was it the purpose of the amendment to transfer the security and protection of all the civil rights? It doesn't mean these civil rights we're talking about. This is another branch under your political status. Political rights and civil rights make up your legal personality, which have been mentioned from the states to the federal government, and that Congress shall have the entire domain of civil rights heretofore belonging exclusively to the states, question mark. We're convinced that no such results were intended by the Congress which proposed these amendments, nor by the legislature of the states ratified them. So it's telling you, in two separate citizenships, and it goes into them in some detail. I'll jump forward in this a little bit into the next page under Section 3 there, and this is from Wong Kim Ark. It's another case going into the 14th Amendment. And the opening sentence of the 14th Amendment is throughout affirmative and declaratory, intended to allay doubts and to settle controversies which had arisen, and not to impose any new restrictions on citizenship. So you wonder why that passport has two citizens listed in there? Because there are two. And the 14th Amendment, according to Chief Justice Waite, did not impose any new restrictions on the old citizenship. And at that time, the theory largely obtained and stated by Justice Story, a very great man in the early part of the country that did commentaries on the Constitution, that every citizen of a state is ipso facto a citizen of the United States. Now, I want to explain to you in simpler language what they did. In the original citizenship, you had citizens of the state first, and what does Chief Justice Story here said? They were ipso facto. That's a legal term by the very fact. So by the very fact that they were citizens of the states, they were automatically, secondarily, citizens of the United States. They were citizens of the states. What did we say? You get your rights and you owe duties. And you owe your allegiance, right? Allegiance for protection, protection for allegiance. Where did they get their allegiance? From the state. That was immediately under them. They were state citizens first, and they were United States citizens ipso facto secondly. The 14th Amendment switched that, because these black people who had been property, they'd been things legally, the object of someone's property to them, after the Civil War they were free, but they had no legal status. So what did they do? They gave them a federal citizenship. And a citizen of the United States is first, and what's the second one? A state. But you have to reside in it to be a citizen of it. So the first one is a citizen of the United States. They get it from the federal government. Where do they get their rights, and where do they owe their duties? To the federal government. And what if they're a state citizen second? How do they get to be it? They have to reside within the state for them to be one. Okay, is this getting clear? Is this clear as clear or clear as mud? Well, I guess it must be clear as clear, so we're going to roll forward. The other thing to realize that's interesting here is that, and I just found this out about a year or so ago, talking to a guy up in North Carolina who's forming their own states under the old state laws, because all the states, as we know them, were dissolved in the Reconstruction Acts after the Civil War. So you don't really have states. You have political subdivisions of the federal government. So there's really no state comparable, except the one this guy's forming up in North Carolina, where you can be a state citizen. So what did they change citizen to? A U.S. national. That's the other legal status listed in the passport application. That's not Roger telling you. That's the federal government telling you. And they tell you right up at the top that you can make some declarations and you can apply and attach them to that application and send them in. And if you lie about it, they're going to come get you. Well, I sent mine in twice, and I've got two passports, and they hadn't messed with me. This is an unrebutted affidavit for those of you that are looking at it. It was filed on December 31st of 92. It's almost 20 years old. It's gone through five different agencies of the federal and state government. Nobody's ever said boo, raised one objection, or rebutted it, or objected to it in any way, shape, or form. When I presented this affidavit to them, it's just like the Wizard of Oz when you're throwing a bucket of water on the Wicked Witch of the West. Okay? They shrink away and they comply with what you want to do. Clear? You there yet, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay, so clear as clear or clear as mud?
Little of each.
Okay.
It's just as clear as it can be.
You're going to have to go back and study this, man. Nobody said freedom's easy, all right?
That's
and nobody
right.
said you're going to get it easily. You're going to have to work for it. You know, there's a great quote from a great Supreme Court. He has one of the greatest names I've ever heard. His name was Judge Learned Hand. It's his real name. And in one of his decisions, he said, to claim your rights, you must be a belligerent claimant. You must be a belligerent claimant. They're not going to give them to you. You got to go fight for them, folks. So this is also interesting. I heard Bob Chapman alluding to this right before we came on tonight. What did he say? They're now going all over the world, and they're making all these countries report property deals for many Americans, is what he said. And listen, I got the highest respect in the world for him. I've been listening to him for 12 or more years, religiously. I followed his advice. I'm set pretty for the rest of my life, okay? But let me tell you what, he made one mistake there. It's not only just Americans. In fact, it's not Americans. It's to citizens of the United States and residents. And if you'll read all these banking laws with all these treaties they sign, all of this reporting is only done for citizens of the United States and residents. Why? Because you're their property, man. Citizens of the United States are the only citizens in the world that are taxed on their worldwide income. Why do they do it? Because they own you. So how have you gotten into this system? How did you get into this mess? Well, you volunteered, man. Okay? They asked you. They said, are you a citizen of the United States? They did it in contract form. They did it on bank applications. They did it when you went to get a driver's license. And the very first question is, are you a resident? Everybody goes, yeah, I live right over there on 12 whatever street. Well, okay, you're a resident. Boom, they complete it. Well, what are they telling you? You told them you're a slave. You didn't know that's what you told them. The person at the clerk didn't know that's what you told them. But somebody up there in the higher ends of Washington, D.C. knows about it. They know exactly about it. So that's one thing. Oh, by the way, too, where else do they ask you that question, Jeff? When was the last time did you go down originally and register to vote?
I've avoided that one as long as humanly possible, right. But yeah, exactly.
Well, if you go down to register to vote, guess what one of the questions is? Are you a citizen of the United States? Sure, boom. What do? You sign it. You signature. You sign what, Jeff? You sign contracts, don't you?
Exactly.
You told them what you were when you checked it. You know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Isn't that the old phrase, cliche, that you hear so long? And people say the federal government is tyranny. Hell, man, they're not. They're just enforcing this feudal law of regulations, all right? Tyranny is when they tell you what you are. But they didn't set it up that way. They ask you, and you told them what you were. Well, hell, Jeff, you ought to know you're a slave. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. You ought to know what you are.
Exactly. Let me interrupt for just a second. I've got a couple of emails I want to share with you. The first one, and I know... what you're doing, because you're trying to get so much information out after all these years of this pent-out information. I received a marvelous email from Harry down in Tennessee who says, Jeff, I enjoy your show. I am enjoying the hell out of your guests. His information intrigues me. I have but one small request. Please slow him down a little so some of us sluggers can keep up with his great information. Well. But this is the one I want to share with you. This is quite interesting, and we can get to this as an answer on another day, but it's going to give you an idea of the kind of comments we're receiving while you're on the air. Connor writes, I'm really liking the series with Roger. I have a question I have seen asked that Roger may have an answer to. There are many of us out there who moved to the U.S. and are now resident aliens. How does all of this work for us? I found out after I moved here that the country I had moved to was something other than the America that was intended. I found out that after studying American history, I've decided I cannot in good conscience take the oath of citizenship to the bastardized corporate entity running the show.
Well, what I would tell Connor immediately is if you've got that term resident, whether it's alien or not, or non-alien, if you've told them that, the question I'd ask Connor, are you obligated to pay taxes and do you have to follow other regulations? And if that answer is yes, then, yeah, you're in slavery, man. Okay.
Interesting.
So, okay, but let's go back to where we are, and I'm sorry for talking so fast. That's the way I am, okay, and I'll try and slow it down. But I would also say to Harry up in Tennessee and to anyone else that had that comment is that's why we're going to record these and we're going to put them on the website so you can go back and listen to them at your own pace. You can hit the pause button on whatever device you're using to play them, and you can study them. And we're going to offer at the end of this series a guide if you choose to purchase it, which you can also follow that has this information, and it's expanded somewhat, okay? So I'll try and be conscious of that. You know, talking to no telling how many people and trying to complete a goal of 18 years on something that I know so well because I've lived it for so long, I understand, and I hope you understand my position. I'll try and be conscious of that, but you're going to have to put some work into this. It's not easy to untie the knots. This is very complicated. What did it say in our citizenship laws are very complex? Okay, they're honest with you, and they are complex. And if that's why the definitions are so important. If you don't know that stuff, you're not going to read these things and impute the right legal definitions into those words. So try and keep all that in perspective. I'll try and slow it down. I know that the information is complicated. Okay? And hopefully Jeff can have me back, and we'll be glad to take calls or any of that.
Absolutely.
So the answer, as I was saying, the other one, the terrible question is, are you a resident? Because everybody imputes a geographical definition to that term. But as an old salesman, you know, the answer was answer a question with a question. So I started answering it when they'd ask me that question. I say, are you imputing a geographical or a political definition to that term? Okay, that's a good way to come back on them. So the actions of the federal government are not tyranny. They're enforcing governing regulations on a regulated group to which they legally have property rights. That's you, folks, if you've ever answered any of that yes, and you've not gone back and properly extricated yourself with an or some statement that is filed in some place like the property book. Just like I said last night, where does the IRS file their liens? Okay. They ask you what you are, and you told them. And as we've discussed, you've heard, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Jeff, if I ask you that question and you answered me, you ought to know what the heck you are. That's your responsibility as a citizen to know that kind of stuff. Only thing is, they've made it so complicated, even the finest legal minds in the country don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you expect it to understand it? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
The theory for all this, this is my opinion, the theory from all this, I believe, a guy named John Locke. I didn't even know who this guy was, I'm embarrassed to say, when I got into this. He was one of the main influences on Thomas Jefferson, who I can really consider to be the finest mind that the country's ever produced. And John Locke was a Scotsman. He wrote prolifically back in those days. And one of his books was called Two Treaties of Government. And one of those treaties was government by contract. And like, once again, because I know my enemy and I understand the information we're covering, I would just about guarantee you that that's where this whole idea came from. Okay? So if you've told them, you got to make a declaration of your political status, and you can't do that until you understand it. Because I'm going to tell you, if you make it at some point and you start presenting this to the federal agencies that are coming at you, you're going to be forced to defend it. That's why you got to make this information yours. And it's going to take a little bit of study, and it's going to take a little bit of work. Okay? I can't help that. I can help you. I can show you. I can explain it to you. But I can't do it for you. Let me tell you one, though, that I think may help you a lot. How much time we got, Jeff? We got 7 minutes?
Yeah, okay. Probably about 6 minutes, five, 6 minutes.
Okay, well, then I'm going to get into this, and we're going to continue it tomorrow night because this is important. And it's, you know, it's funny. I'd been in this for years, and I never understood this. We all got into this as a taxing thing because everybody, you know, everybody's interested in their pocketbooks, and it's a way to get more people's attention when we used to have to do this from the bottom up. And at some point early on, we went to see a guy, and he specialized in administrative law, which is, you know, administrative agencies. And he said the key to understanding this is administrative law. And it was years before I really realized that the key to understanding the whole system is administrative agencies. And the reason for that is because those are the guys that write the regulations for the regulated group. If you got an administrative agency like the IRS and they write a regulation, does it apply to somebody in Hungary or somebody in Japan or somebody in Australia? No. It applies to the group that they regulate. By their own definition, they're regulatory agencies. They regulate. They got to regulate somebody. They regulate a regulated group. So if you're not in that group, they don't regulate you. But everybody's kind of intimidated and dinged by administrative agencies, aren't they? This is the absolute key. When did they come about? We didn't have them before the 30s. That's when Franklin D. Roosevelt brought all these administrative agencies in. And they tried in the latter part of the 30s for years to get a piece of legislation through called the Administrative Procedures Act, the APA. It's in Section 5 of the United States Code. And it wasn't until after the war in 1946 that the Administrative Procedures Act was finally passed. And those govern these administrative agencies and who they can regulate and how they can regulate them, specifically by promulgating regulations. We'll take Civics 101. I know we're getting close to the hour here. But how are laws passed? Congress, you either originate a bill in the House or you originate a bill in the Senate. If they don't totally agree, they go to a conference committee and they hammer it out where they both agree. Then they take that finished piece of legislation and they ship it over to the president, and he says it then becomes law, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What does he do with it? He goes and gives it to the administrative agency whose jurisdiction that law falls under. And they promulgate regulations. And the regulations don't always necessarily come off of the law. So you've got these people where they put in the same system they did in France after the French Revolution. They've got unelected bureaucrats in key policy positions which make, promulgate is the proper word, regulations that apply to a regulated group. Who's the regulated group? Citizens of the United States and residents.
And with that, we got to hold till the next time. I've got about a minute left. I need to do several things. First, I want to guide our listeners to a couple places. Have to take care of a little RBN business here. Please go to Republic Trading Group International.com. Click on tonight's treasure chest for the special package offering for gold we have for the week. Also, click into the article that's marked Returning April 5th, 2011, Roger Sales. Scroll down. Click on the Get Out of Slavery card. Pay attention. Understand what you're looking at. This is going to be an intense education, but Roger's right, and it's exactly what I've been telling you for years. You know, all I can do is lead you to water. From that point on, it's up to you to drink of the truth and to do your own research and to do your own studies. Take what we've taught you over this, Roger's taught you over these last two nights and subsequent nights coming up. You're going to have to do the work if you want to set yourself free. Nobody else can do it for you.
We want a cluster flock of black swans.
That's it, buddy. Hey, listen, I'll talk to you later. Thanks for being with us again, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for us to go. I've had three hard hours tonight, but they've been good hours. So stay with us here on RBN. We'll be back another time. Take care of yourselves.
See you, Chief.
Yeah, bud.
Oh, baby, what you got, nobody has. And I got you. Yes, I got you. I got you. And all that jazz. And all that jazz.